welcome, you wonderful, purposeful, and beautiful humans, to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins. Hope Still Wins is a place where we get to know thought leaders from diverse backgrounds and differing worldviews to help us feel less alone, more connected, and move us to become a better world together. Each week, I'll be interviewing inspiring and relatable guests in attempts to get to know their hearts, celebrate their stories, and explore the concept of hope to hear how and if it has played a role in their lives. Ultimately, answering the question, does hope still win? If so, why? And if not, why not? This week, I have the honor of talking with Terrence Lester. Here's a little background on Terrence. Terrence is a speaker, author, activist, and thought leader in the realm of systematic poverty. He is the founder of the nonprofit Love Beyond Walls, which helps individuals experiencing homelessness and poverty rebuild their lives. He's the founder of the first museum in the U.S. representing homelessness out of a shipping container called the Dignity Museum. In Terrence's new book, When We Stand, The Power of Seeking Justice Together, is out right now. You can grab a copy. Well, it could be your copy, wherever books are sold. So in short, Terrence is an amazing voice for Hope Still Wins. Terrence's interview is one that I believe represents Hope Still Wins so well. He is somebody I learn from, I admire, I want to walk beside. And I believe that all of us out there, wherever you're at in life, can learn a ton from Terrence Lester. Well, we get the opportunity to right now on Hope Still Wins. In this episode with Terrence, we talk about breaking down the barriers of worthlessness, the true meaning and feeling of the word home, the power of noticing people, and what it means to be an accumulator versus being a distributor. And finally, what hope looks like for the homeless population. And we talk about a lot more. The one that really stands out to me, really stood out to me, and has made me just focus on it ever since then, is what it means to be an accumulator versus being a distributor. Well, I suggest you grab yourself a pen and paper. Yes, you need to. For this one amazing episode, my friends. It's packed with wisdom and tangible steps we can take right now, today, wherever you're at, to be a difference maker in our communities. Now, I know you're all on the edge of your seats, so it's time for this week's question. I invite you to respond on Instagram at Hope Still Wins in the comments or direct message us. We love connecting with you outside of these weekly conversations. So after you listen to this week's episode, we ask you to ask yourself this question. How can you be a distributor in your community this week, maybe this summer, or throughout the entire year, maybe on for a lifetime? Again, how can you be a distributor? We are eager to hear your responses, and hey, here's the thing. How cool would it be if one day the Hope Still Wins community could connect in communities all around the world to be distributors? Maybe I'm just dreaming, but that would be awesome. Now, wouldn't that be something? Well, hey, I'm excited to share a few of your responses from episode 5 with Ben Moon. As a reminder, Ben and I spent a lot of time talking about the power of sharing our personal story and how it can impact the world. So we asked all of you to share a piece of your story with the Hope Still Wins community. The responses were very, very special. Well, I thank you for that. Thank you for sharing with us. This is incredible. Here they are. Alexa shared, she was adopted at the age of 12. She loves books. She struggles with anxiety and depression. She also shared that she finds hope in reading books and praying daily. Right now, I look out at the lake. I'm here in Indiana, and I'm just taking some time to pray, to read, to reconnect. I need it personally, for many reasons. Maybe we'll talk about that later in an episode. But I think about you, Alexa, right now. And I think about the ability to just be, to learn, to grow, to be in the presence of others and of God and the works of others. Warren Buffett, the great philosopher. Man, he's a good businessman. Once said that the key to life is getting a little smarter each day. And I think praying and reading does that. So, Alexa, thank you for sharing. Allie B said that she loves baseball and the Cubs. Oh, Allie B. Pulling out my heart. Go Cubs. It's a tough year, though. But she admits that she is a little skittish at times and finds hope in God, love, family, friends, and feel-good TV, books, and podcasts. I think there's something really big here, Allie, and to all of us. You find hope in God and love. And love is of God, and God is love. What does that mean? How amazing is it that we believe that we have a God that loves us, that cherishes us, that cares for us, that calls us family and friends? What hope can we find in that? If that is true, and for many of us, we believe that. For many of you, you don't believe that. But if it was true, if it is true, what does that mean for our lives? How does that bring purpose and passion to what we do? I think that is something incredible, Allie B. Thank you for sharing. Please, please share as the weeks go on. We're very, very excited to hear more of your stories, to share a piece of your lives. I wish I could have shared all of the stories that were written in, but since we can't, just know that each and every one of you that wrote in were read, they were considered, they were contemplated on, and they were enjoyed. You are somebody incredible. All right. Well, hey, it's time. Make sure you have your pen and paper out. You're going to want it. You're going to need it. I'm telling you right now, if you listen to this episode and you don't have it at the end, you're going to say, I have to listen to this whole thing again. Well, I don't hate that either for you. But hey, enjoy this episode. It's time for my interview, my very, very lucky interview with Terrence Lester. Terrence Lester, thank you so much for joining Hope Still Wins.
Ben, I am excited to be here. I've heard so much about this podcast, and I can't wait to join you in this conversation.
Man, I tell you what, a few weeks ago, we took a poll for everybody that listens and said, hey, what guest do you want to have on the podcast? You were one of the people mentioned the most. And so it's an honor for us. And I know the listeners are excited for it. But I dove in to your story and what you're up to over the last couple of days here prepping for this moment. And I'm telling you, I cannot be more excited to learn from you today. It's a real gift, and this is where I want to dive in, Terrence, right from the beginning, because I think what you're doing and what your life represents is exactly what I hope one day this podcast represents for many. You made a statement in a video that I watched where you hope that every single person can realize their value and their purpose to make a difference, and that's where I want to start this interview. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I mean, firstly, whoever voted or, you know, contributed my name to the poll, I am super excited that we get a chance to have this conversation. But secondly, to really preface that statement, I'm mostly talking about persons who feel like their lives are just existing without meaning. Specifically, I do work for people experiencing homelessness, and oftentimes, one of the huge issues in breaking down the barriers to building a relationship is this barrier of worthlessness, where people feel like their lives have no meaning. When you think about people experiencing homelessness within the United States, people are passed by every single day, they are overlooked, and they are in many ways treated as if they are invisible. And it just doesn't stop with this population of people. I think there are so many other people in our nation, in our world, that feel overlooked and unseen. And, you know, I want to live my life in a way that inspires people to see their worth, their value, and the potential of what they have to offer this life, man. I mean, it's just that simple.
So what is it about your story that's led you to want to do this and to make it your living and your calling?
Well, it starts with, you know, struggle and hardship. I remember early on myself being a person who felt worthless just with my social location. I grew up in a family and was exposed to a lot of violence early on, drugs, growing up in neighborhoods that oftentimes made it hard for a young Black male to reach his potential. And so I also had a challenge where I experienced temporary homelessness when I was a teenager. And if it wasn't for one of my friend's fathers, whose name is Mr. Moore, coming into my life and literally seeing me and encouraging me and calling out the good in me, you know, I probably would still be somewhere floating around feeling worthless. And so Mr. Moore was a person who showed me that the things that I had gone through or experienced in my younger years wasn't something that literally would be something that would hold me back, but could be something that was powerful and that I could use to actually relate and empower other people. And once I realized that, I moved and got stable and graduated high school, went on to college, found my wife. And then I also started to have more conversations with Mr. Moore surrounding what type of work that I would do with my life. And I guess that's how I landed in the passion of doing the nonprofit work that I'm doing now. It is deeply connected to the pain that I overcame, but it's also connected to wanting to relate to people who are in the struggle that I once was in.
I mean, you just said a line that stands out to me is using the pain that you've gone through to now do what you do, which is some incredible stuff that we're going to dive into here in just a bit in some detail. But when you meet somebody now who is feeling pushed aside, feeling invisible, feeling worthless, what approach do you take to them to help them see their value and their worth, just like Mr. Moore did for you?
Such a beautiful question. Well, firstly, I operate with the framework or the mentality that home is much more than just four walls and a roof. Home is a place where you feel seen, accepted, and you feel like you belong. And so every person that I encounter, I'm operating with this mindset that there's a potential that someone I'm encountering may have a roof, or they may not have a roof. They may have a roof and still feel sociologically homeless, or they may not have a roof and they feel like they haven't found a place where they feel accepted. And so a lot of my passion and my approaches to people is to find out or figure out ways that I could ensure that people feel seen. And, you know, the basic things are just noticing people. One of the greatest joys I have as a nonprofit leader is just basically asking people, what is your name? You know, I'll never forget a time we were out and we were doing work in the community and we had come across this guy named Tyrus. Tyrus was standing on the street corner. He was holding a sign. He was trying to get dollars, not for drugs or alcohol, but so he could purchase his medication. And I'll never forget asking him his name, and it kind of broke down one barrier. And then I started asking him other questions. Well, long story short, Tyrus then starts to tell us about how when other people fear him, like on the other side of that fear, it damages his self-worth. He says, man, I've been out here for days and, you know, it does something to me when people lock their doors or they turn their heads the other way or they act like I am invisible. He says, the very fact that we are having this conversation and you are calling me by my name does something deep within my soul, and it makes me feel like I have dignity, right? And I think that is so important. How often do we take time not to just notice people based upon what they're wearing or what crowd of people they hang with or the location where they live, but really noticing the depths of someone where we get a chance to build a relationship and know their hopes and their fears and their dreams and their aspirations, but also their struggles and their shortcomings. And the second part of that, Ben, is that I'm not just seeing people just to pat myself on the back. I'm seeing people in a way that opens up the door for me to create community with people, because I too need to be seen. And I think in that forms this mutual beneficial relationship that gets established. And from there, the sky's the limit. I mean, some of our greatest campaigns as an organization has come from conversations with people that we've just been proximate to.
Terrence, I'm going to ask you a question here. It might be obvious to you, and I think that's why it's the right question to ask you personally, is if I'm listening right now and I'm hearing this, why should I care? Why should I, as an individual, say, I'm going to go out of my way to help people feel seen? What motivates you?
That is such a profound question, but it's also one that is very obvious. And here's why I say obvious, Ben, is because I would not be where I am today. You would not be where you are today. Nobody would be where they are today without the blood, sweat, and tears of someone else's sacrifice. There is no such thing as a self-made man or woman. We live in a world where we are interconnected, that what I do for you, I am also doing for myself. And I think we are in a moment in time where even during the pandemic and COVID-19 has shown us that together we survive, together we move forward, together we overcome disparity and injustice, and together we have an opportunity to strengthen one another. I mean, that is the core essence of community. I also borrow the language of M.L. King, who in his sermon during Christmas 1967 uses this language of, you know, having a world house. We live in a world house. We're in a global village. He uses this language to paint the entire world as our address, not just our addresses that we live in day to day. Life is much more robust, and it's bigger than just me, myself, and I. And so I think the quote that I would like to leave people with, or the thought that I would like to leave people with, is, you know, at the end of your life, your legacy is not the stuff that you accumulate or you amass, or it's not necessarily your successes. It's what you left behind that impacted people that actually creates your legacy. There are two types of people, Ben. There are accumulators and there are distributors. And what I've learned early on is that accumulators spend most of their time amassing a bunch of stuff, only to find out at the end of their lives they have to downsize and give it away anyway. A distributor thinks like, how can I live my life as a conduit, where the things that I've been blessed with or the things that I've been fortunate to have in my life, I can steward them well, not just to enjoy them for my own pleasure, but also to live in such a way where I can be a impactful person in the lives of people around me. And that's just the mentality that I've adopted, that I live in a world, and the world is the address. We're in a global village, and I'm just living my life intentionally in a way where I want to extend welcome into the beloved community to anyone I encounter.
And what has that mentality done for you as you've focused on seeing the world as an address and seeing anybody wherever they're at as an opportunity for a relationship?
I mean, gosh, it's done so many different things for me. It's made me a better person in how I am empathetic towards others. It's made me a better listener. It has built my, you know, my character, and provided me with the grounding of humility it's also established a lot of my core values that I've been able to pass along to my kids. I mean, the messages that I am teaching now that I learned from being proximate to my neighbors and in community, I wouldn't have never had these opportunities had I not, you know, decided to do something for other people. I mean, I've been fortunate to write books and give talks and like meet so many different cool people. And I never even signed up to do that. That wasn't the focus. It was just literally to focus on showing up to see how I could be the best person that I could be, not only for my community, but for people who've been overlooked. And what I'm basically saying, Ben, is the world starts to open up once you are generous with your time and your resources and the way that you contribute to your community. I think the world has opened up to me and I'm just getting started. You know, dreams come to me, innovative ideas. I mean, think about it. Like last year, during the middle of the pandemic, I'm leading a nonprofit and I'm thinking about how we should pivot from a centralized model, because we have a community center, to a much more decentralized model where we could still show up for people when the world was shutting down. I'll never forget, this guy walks into our center. His name was Dimitri, and he was in tears. He didn't have anywhere to go. And he literally said these words: I keep hearing I'm supposed to wash my hands, but I have nowhere to wash my hands. Because the libraries are closed, businesses are closed, people don't want me to come around, and I have no access to water. And so instead of retreating or running away, that very fear of his and that concern forced me to think even more creative and come up with a practical solution. And so I came up with an idea to start deploying these portable hand washing stations. We started with 5, it grew to 15, it grew to 50. And now we're in 62 cities all around the country because the story spread. And during the pandemic, the height of the pandemic, you had over 30,000 people having access to soap and water, being able to wash their hands while living on the streets. Not because I chose to retreat or run away and just be about me, myself, and I and fight over toilet paper or paper towels in the grocery store, but I leveraged this as an opportunity to see how I could show up for my neighbor even more. And it's opened up even more doors and opportunities for us to advocate on behalf of persons without an address and really inspire more empathy in the world as people think about how they should show up in their communities. I mean, it opens up the world to you is what I'm saying.
But I'm sure you heard it before. There's somebody listening right now that's going, this is pulling out my heart, right? The idea that somebody didn't have a place to wash their hands, somebody that just wanted to be called by their name. I want to get out there and I wanted to be a distributor, but I have nothing to give. Like I don't have any material items. I don't have any emotional items. My spiritual health is gone. Like I am at my lowest end. I have nothing to give. What would you say to that person?
Man, firstly, I'll say I can relate. And that is, you know, a place that feels desolate. It feels like you are in the middle. And when I describe the middle, oftentimes when I give talks, I'm talking about it feels like you've pushed away from the shore and you're too far away from the shore to swim back. And you're not where you expected that you would be or the destination that you have in mind. And so you feel like you're in the middle. I think this is a critical moment for you, actually. It's the moment where you open yourself up and make yourself vulnerable to be seen. I think there's real strength and real life that can happen for you in this moment if you avail yourself. Sometimes it's not even about giving an item or a resource or time. Sometimes it's giving of yourself and opening yourself up where you can be filled with support and affirmation and words of encouragement and letting people know very specifically what it is that you need in this moment. You'll never know where your next spark could come from if you remain silent. I can relate because I was in a place where I was silent, where I was broken and I felt like it was a desolate place. But the thing that I learned and the thing that turned my world around and even how I was seeing where I was is that I had to make myself vulnerable. And if that is the only thing that you have to give at this moment, it could be something that could become a seed that would grow and blossom into something beautiful in the future. And what I'm saying is investing your now by opening yourself up and becoming a part of a community that could support you while you walk through your middle place.
This week's episode of Hope Still Wins is brought to you by Generous International. Generous International is a company that I co-founded. Generous donates 100% of profits to nonprofits fighting human-facing injustice. So every bag of coffee bought, every cup of coffee drink is going back to make the world a better place. Generous is best known for selling coffee, specialty grade coffee. So it's some of the best coffee in the world. You're going to drink coffee anyways, and like we like to say, why not make it life-changing coffee? Well, you can visit Generous at generouscoffee.com. Please go out today and check out Generous Coffee. This isn't just about you. In fact, it's as you said earlier, like this isn't really about you at all. In fact, your new book is about bringing people together. You have a vision and a hope and a dream that people will walk in this as a community to fight injustice, to care for those who need it, to look around them and pay attention to the people around them. Why? What is it? What do you hope for in that community, and what do you hope for if the masses get involved and say, I want to be a distributor?
Yeah, I think it's endless, man. I think there are endless possibilities when people make the decision to connect with other people. I'll never forget, I was on the front lines, height of the pandemic, I was exhausted. I was going back and forth. The team that works with our organization was literally sanitizing and filling up hand washing stations almost every single day because that's how great the need was. And I'll never forget, I was sitting in my office and it's almost like the Mr. Rogers quote that says, look for the helpers, right? And I'll never forget coming across this story of this kid up north. He's about 7 or 8 years old, who took all of his birthday money and all of his allowance money, and he started making these sandwich bags to take to elderly folks to make sure they had something to eat because a lot of people were immobile. And all of these other people started surrounding him and supporting, and we just saw this mushroom of support. The same thing with our organization. I think when you start a spark, people who choose to come around it and get warm for it also bring their sparks, right? And it has the potential to create this ripple effect that can create this positive movement of social change in the local way. And my hope is to see people come together from all walks of life, knowing that they have something to offer, even if it's not monetary, it's a gift. It's a, you know, it's some bit of wisdom. It's some knowledge, regardless of how big or how small. When people come together and bring all of their gifts and their offerings together, I think that creates this type of movement and ripple effect where we can see more change happening across our country and world.
Then, in more detail, Terrence's book is called "When We Stand," It's something I hope everybody can pick up and everybody can join into, because the cool part is this isn't a concept that leaves anybody out. We can all be a part of this. And so we've talked on justice a little bit here, and I'm going to ask you a really big question. But what does justice mean to you then? When we speak of justice, how do you define it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think justice is righting the wrongs that keeps people from achieving their full potential. For instance, it's one thing to give a person a sandwich, right, who needs a meal for the moment. I think that is more charitable. I think it's much more of a justice mindset to look at a community and go, why is this community a food desert? Why are there no grocery stores in this community? And really understand the barriers that prohibit people within the context of this community from having access to healthier foods. I mean, when you look at dense communities all around the country, you see, you know, a higher population of liquor stores. You see a higher concentration of dialysis centers. You see, you know, lower access to produce. And I'm just using this as, you know, an example. I think the justice question asks, what can we do to correct this and ensure that people in the community who are being oppressed or experiencing this form of injustice has the ability to have access to things that other people who have privileges have access to? I think that is the real essence of equity. Equality is one thing. It's saying that, no, brother, you have the same value. Equity is ensuring that everyone has what they need, and that is the difference.
You have a unique, with a nonprofit that you run, you're the founder of Love Beyond Walls, and if anyone wants to get involved, I encourage you to Google it, Love Beyond Walls. The website will come up. You can get on. You can see everything that Terrence and the team at Love Beyond Walls is doing. You have I think it's a revolutionary kind of way of going about fighting injustice and bringing justice. It's about relationship for you. Do you mind sharing a little bit more about kind of Love Beyond Walls strategy as you enter into the places that you serve?
I would love to share much more about that. When I think about relationships, I'm thinking about how can I bring people together from totally different ends of the spectrum in community, you know? And I wanted to design our organization in a way where we weren't necessarily a conveyor belt model, just sticking a bunch of services out there or throwing a bunch of services at people. I really wanted the relational model where not only are we finding unique ways to fill the gaps in persons' lives, but you have a mobilized and organized community of people walking with people out of the plight and the issues of homelessness. But it doesn't stop there, because our organization is helping people recover their identification cards, reunite with family members, find access to shelter, temporary shelter and stable housing, helping people to learn employable skills so they can become employable, you know, showing up within the context of community, offering technology. You know, some of our friends experiencing homelessness are in school right now, but they don't have a place to stay. And sometimes they visit our center just to use Wi-Fi. I mean, Wi-Fi is a privilege. And so we just try to find unique ways to meet a person's basic needs and use that as a vehicle to enter into relationship so we can walk with people out of the issues and the plight of homelessness.
Well, two last questions for you, Terrence. And again, I'm so fired up to hear your story and to hear what your story's led you to and to hear what you're doing for so many and what they're doing for you in return. I do want to mention, and we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast as well, but you have the Dignity Museum, something incredible that if anybody is near it, to check out. But Terrence, I do have two last questions for you. This show is based on hope. And some people have said that they don't know if hope still wins. Some people who've came on said that they don't know if they've ever seen hope, and some communities never seen hope. And so I want to ask you two questions when it comes to hope. One is, do you believe that hope still wins for the homeless community? And if so, why? And if not, why not?
Man, when I hear the word hope, it does two things to me as it relates to homelessness. It gives me a lot of joy, but it also gives me a lot of sorrow. It gives me a lot of joy because I know that there are other helpers or persons of goodwill out there fighting on behalf of people experiencing homelessness all around the country and world. But it also brings this bit of sorrow. And the reason I say a bit of sorrow is because while there are a group of people fighting and advocating on behalf of this vulnerable population, there's also the rise of the criminalizing laws that are forming to criminalize what it means to experience this plight. And so in cities, you know, there are laws and ordinances where you can't share a meal with someone experiencing homelessness, or if you're homeless, you can't stand in certain places. I mean, there was a city in South Carolina in January that voted unanimously to outright ban sleeping outside, period. So like, even if you sleep outside, you can be taken to jail. And so I think that part of the sorrow in a weird way inspires me to go even harder, to show up even more and try to reach out to more people to inspire, to see the need for them to stand up and fill the gap. Because I truly see hope as being something formed and emerging out of people coming together in community. And the more people that we can get involved and see their unique space in this world or their unique contribution in this world, the more hope that other people will see, specifically with this plight, but just in general, period.
And the final question for you, Terrence, do you believe that hope still wins? If so, why? And if not, why not?
I do. Hope wakes me up every morning. Hope gives me ideas. Hope allows these types of conversations to happen. Hope causes me to want to figure out how I can show up in the middle of crisis. Hope gives me this sense of anticipation and expectancy that something greater is on the other side of this present moment. Whether it's a moment of joy or a moment of sorrow, hope is my lifeline. It's the reason why I'm able to continue to persevere and advocate for a population of people that are invisible. You know, hope found me. So I can never let go of hope. And I hope anyone who is listening to this understands that even when you can't sense hope or trace hope or feel hope for yourself, hope is searching for you.
Man, I appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for coming on Hope Still Wins. You are the perfect guest for this to encourage all of us out there to take action, to encourage all of us to understand our value and also look around us and distribute the skills, the resources, the time, the presence that we all have. Terrence Lester, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a joy.
Ben, thank you, man. It's been a pleasure meeting you and being a part of this wonderful podcast.
Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Hope Still Wins. I told you, you needed a pen and a paper. Well, I now know you are all probably agreeing with me. He is somebody incredible. You are somebody incredible. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow the show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed this conversation, please consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple. Share the show with a friend. That's really important. And join the community over on Instagram at Hope Still Wins. As a reminder, our question from this week's episode is, how can you be a distributor in your community this week, this summer, throughout the rest of this year, or for a lifetime? The team and I are excited to hear from you. We read every one of your responses, I promise. We invite you to join us on Instagram to share your ideas and continue the conversation. As always, we'll be choosing a few of your responses to share in a later episode. Well, hey all, that's it for today. You're awesome. You should know it. It's been a good week. It's been a great week. I hope you all have a great week, my dear friends. Thank you again for tuning in to Hope Still Wins. I'm your host, Ben Higgins, and I'll be talking to you next week.